commit.
So we've done biology, we've done physics, now we get to geology.
Energy's conserved. Thank you.
Our next speaker is Steve Mosher, professor of geology at Wheaton College. And you're on the ASA Council, right?
Yes, I am, sir.
Yep.
Yes.
And so, Steve.
Hi. My co-authors are Ken Wolgemuth and Greg Davidson. We are part of the team that wrote this book, which is available, Grand Canyon Monument to an Ancient Earth. And there is also a ministry that we have called Solid Rock Lectures, which is available to go into seminaries and talk about science and particularly geology to emerging seminarians or emerging pastors. Today I'm going to talk about catastrophic plate tectonics, or as it's known by the young Earth advocates for this, as continental sprint. It's a theory for rapid reorganization of the Earth's lithosphere that would have accompanied the Genesis flood, according to its originators, including John Baumgartner, Steve Austin, Kurt Wise, and Andrew Snelling. The theory borrows from basic concepts of plate tectonics, like seafloor spreading, subduction, plate collisions, that are supported by geological and geophysical research and measured by global positioning satellites. Their claim is that the current movement of the lithospheric plates on the order of centimeters per year could have accelerated to meters per second through a process of rapid stress weakening of the mantle, resulting in runaway subduction and mantle convection. Plate tectonic motion initiated at the beginning of the flood with the breakup of the Rodinia supercontinent, formed another supercontinent called Pangaea, and again dispersed to the present configuration in as little as 150 days. Advocates are fond of calling this continental sprint as a play on the conventionally used description of continental drift. Maps on the right show the progressive movement of the ancient continents leading to the final assembly of Pangaea. So did Rodinia break up and Pangaea assemble in 600 million years or 2 months? Modern plate tectonics emerged in the late 20th century as the unifying theory for the interaction of the upper mantle and crust of the Earth. Canadian geophysicist Jay Tuzo Wilson is credited with compiling the various tectonic elements into a comprehensive model. Ocean crust is produced along mid-ocean ridges by volcanic eruptions, and the crust spreads laterally to where it is consumed or subducted back into the mantle at ocean trenches. Lithospheric plates composed of brittle upper mantle and crust are outlined by divergent, convergent, and transform boundaries. Mountain ranges form when land masses of continental crust collide. While the puzzle fit of the continents across the North Atlantic was noticed by cartographers and scientists before the 20th century, Alfred Wegener was the first scientist to collect evidence that modern continents were once joined in a giant supercontinent that Wegener called Pangaea. This included trends of mountain belts, glacier deposits, and fossil animal and plant distributions. He proposed that Pangaea formed at the end of the Paleozoic era, which is now dated some 250 million years ago. Moving continents became known as continental drift. Acceptance of continental drift was hindered by the lack of a mechanism to drive the continents around the globe. The breakthrough came after World War II and the first map of the ocean floor. Bruce Heason, with his colleague Marie Tharp, Bruce Heason was Ken Wolgemuth's first geology instructor at Columbia University. A little personal connection here. He and Marie Tharp compiled deep ocean floor data to make this now famous map. It revealed the system of mid-ocean ridges offset by transform faults and ocean trenches now recognized as plate boundaries. The idea of seafloor spreading and the origin of ocean basins emerged from the discovery of symmetrical patterns of ocean crust magnetism around the mid-ocean ridges. As ocean crust is produced by volcanic activity along the mid-ocean ridges, the Earth's magnetic changing polarity is preserved in the rock. Deep ocean drilling revealed that the thickness of sediment on the ocean crust increases progressively away from the mid-ocean ridges to continental margins. Sediment accumulates in the deep ocean, mostly plankton, microfossils, and windblown clay, at rates of less than millimeters per year. So thicknesses are consistent with known rates of deposition. Plate boundaries also match the distribution of most earthquakes and volcanoes, such as around the Pacific Ocean, the Ring of Fire. The descent of old ocean crust into the mantle along subduction zones below ocean trenches is revealed by the locations of deep earthquakes, as you can see here in the case of the subducting slab beneath Japan. Deep ocean drilling sites shown on the inset map also recovered ocean crust rock that could be dated by radiometric methods. While continental crust on Earth is as old as 4 billion years, no modern ocean crust is older than about 280 million years. That would be when Pangaea fragmented and the modern oceans began to form. In the next slide, we're going to look at the area inside this circle. We can determine the average rate of plate motion for the North American continent away from the mid-Atlantic ridge by dividing the width of the ocean from the ridge to continental rise, some 3,000 kilometers at this location. The age of the oldest crust here is about 180 million years. This provides a rate of about 1.66 centimeters per year. Now, 2 to 3 centimeters per year is the typical rate, but rates of other plates can exceed 10 centimeters per year. Global positioning satellites allow us to measure actual plate motion at dedicated observatories around the world. There's one near us in Providence, Rhode Island. The rate measured there is 1.6 centimeters per year, consistent with our determination from the ocean floor geology. I'll be honest with you, I picked the one that was the closest to 1.66, but they're all in a very close cluster in that area. To further illustrate evidence for plate motion over millions of years, Solid Rock Lectures, with the support from BioLogos Foundation, developed this video, which is accessible to the public, listed at the URL here. Okay, I knew something was going to happen. Let me start it again. Definitely done something wrong here. I have this hooked up.
Yeah, see if it's on.
It is on. I'm just going to check my settings to make sure that here. I need the headphones. I'm okay. I'll be okay. Yeah. All right. Here we go. Don't panic. Be calm.
The Hawaiian Islands offer a fascinating natural laboratory to test young Earth and old Earth models, including the reliability of radiometric dating. Both models have clear expectations that can be compared with what we actually find in nature. The Hawaiian Islands and Emperor Seamounts formed as a result of the Earth's crust moving over a semi-stationary hotspot deep in the Earth's mantle. The hotspot heats and expands the crust, eventually melting conduits to the surface and building a volcano on the seafloor. As the crust moves, the source of lava is cut off from the older volcano, and a new one begins to form. Away from the hotspot, the crust shrinks, making the island sink, a process called subsidence. The islands also begin to erode, and reefs grow up around the edge, building up layers to stay where sunlight still reaches. According to the old Earth model, this process has been going on for a very long time, maybe sometimes slower or faster, but spread over many millions of years.
Okay.
According to the flood geology, or young Earth model, these islands and seamounts all formed in just a few years, maybe in as little as a single year after the start of Noah's flood. These different models lead to very different expectations in terms of the degree of erosion from one island to the next, the degree of subsidence, reef thickness, and fossils, and what should be expected when rocks from each island are radiometrically dated. We'll start with the flood geology model. Flood geologists argue that when Genesis says the floodgates of the deep opened up, that this is a reference to the crust rupturing at the start of the flood and beginning to move tens of miles per hour. In this view, the hotspot began sometime after the beginning of the flood and was extremely active, bursting to the surface and forming one volcano after the other in rapid sequence. With most of the islands formed at nearly the same time, the crust should have cooled at about the same rate, so each island should have experienced about the same amount of subsidence. Each island should also have experienced about the same amount of erosion and growth of reefs around the edges. And if we look closely at the fossil reef organisms, we should find the same kinds on all the islands since they were all forming at about the same time in the ocean. Now let's consider the old Earth model. Radiometric dating of rocks from many of these islands and seamounts indicate steadily increasing ages up to about 80 million years. Islands formed over millions of years lead to very different expectations. Slow movement of the crust over millions of years should result in large differences in the degree of erosion, the amount of subsidence, reef thickness, and reef fossils. So what do we find? We'll start by looking at a series of islands along the Hawaiian island chain. At the Big Island of Hawaii, we see what an actively growing volcanic island looks like, followed by more and more eroded islands. Considering subsidence, the Hawaiian islands are still mostly above water, but as we continue up through the Emperor Seamounts, they dip below the surface. The ocean crust sits lower and lower until near the end, where the tops of the former islands are under nearly a mile of water. Reef thickness also increases with age and subsidence as reefs add layers to keep within the photic zone. At Midway Island, researchers drilled through 1,000 feet of reef limestone before reaching volcanic rock. In addition to measuring thickness, fossil reef species were identified in core samples. The species changed with depth, with many of those at the bottom found nowhere on Earth alive today. In each case, the evidence fits old Earth expectations.
Again, you can access here at BioLogos. We can compare the geologic determination of average plate motion velocity by plotting the ages of Hawaiian volcanoes and seamounts versus distance from the Big Island. The result is about 8.6 centimeters per year. Modern GPS measurement on the Big Island is 7.9 centimeters per year, which is consistent with the geological measurement. This brings us to the proposed hypothesis of catastrophic plate tectonics, which has been described in articles published in creationist journals and conference proceedings, instructional videos, and illustrated in exhibits at the Answers in Genesis Creation Museum and Ark Encounter in Kentucky. They propose that catastrophic plate tectonics is the inevitable consequence of a pre-flood, cold, dense, basaltic ocean floor crust surrounding the granitic supercontinent, Rodinia, and floating on a warm, less dense upper mantle. They assume, without evidence or theoretical explanation, that the pre-flood mantle viscosity was lower than in the post-flood condition. The flood initiated, they claim, as slabs of ocean floor broke loose and subducted along thousands of kilometers of pre-flood continental margins. Given this imagined instability, they provide no explanation for what would have triggered the sudden collapse of ocean lithosphere around the supercontinent. But to their credit, they admit this problem. We are, however, not ready at this time to speculate on what event or events might have initiated that subduction. In this slide, we see the observed temperature structure in the subduction zone east of Japan. You can see the cold ocean lithosphere descending into the upper mantle zone called the asthenosphere, which is warmer. Clearly, the descending slab disrupts the temperature structure of the asthenosphere. In CPT, friction generates heat around the descending slabs, which lowers surrounding mantle viscosity, leading to what they call a thermal runaway condition and meters per second mantle convection and plate movement. John Baumgartner developed sophisticated computer models to simulate temperature and viscosity conditions in the mantle using assumed but not proved pre-flood mantle conditions. The next two slides show the establishment of rapid mantle-wide convection from surface to the core mantle boundary. This plot depicts conditions at 5 days since the initiation. 12.5 days and 20 days. Within the constraints of the model, large plumes of hot mantle originating near the core mantle boundary rise and express themselves at the surface as fissure eruptions and flood basalts. Flow induced in the mantle also produced rapid extension along linear belts throughout the seafloor and rapid horizontal displacement of continents, as illustrated in Baumgartner's 3D model. This map would depict 15 days after initiation, and here after 25 days. Note that the model depicts the fragmentation of Pangaea and not the original supercontinent of Noah and his kin, Rodinia. Most significantly, the model does not explain the rapid fragmentation of massive, buoyant, granitic continental crust. Rapid formation of ocean crust with lateral accretion at rates of meters per second naturally raises some questions. On the right side, we see a depiction of the modern ocean floor with the observed stratigraphy of igneous rock crystallized from mantle-derived magmas beneath mid-ocean ridges. The deeper material cools slowly and forms coarse crystalline gabbro rock. At a higher level, finer crystalline basalt forms by more rapid crystallization of magma injected into older, cooler rock. Gabbro and basalt have the same chemical composition. It's just a matter of cooling rates, which produce slower cooling produces coarse crystals, and more rapid cooling produces fine crystals. On the surface, lava flows out of fissures in the ocean ridge rift and forms pillow basalt structures. The cross-section depicts how the ocean crust sinks as it cools away from the mantle. This graph of ocean floor depth versus ocean crust age in the North Pacific shows a trend seen in all the oceans. Now, the three curves are not fit to the data. They represent three different independent models for trends for ocean crust subsidence controlled by crustal cooling rates and known crust mantle temperature structure. Note how the data fit quite well into the models, the implication being that the temperatures, heat conditions of the crust match the ages which we receive from the radiometric dating. The right side of the cross-section here represents conditions during catastrophic plate tectonics as described by its advocates. The ocean lithosphere is high across the ocean from mid-ocean ridge to trench because rapid emplacement of isostatically lighter mantle material, and I can describe isostatic later, raise the level of the ocean floor. But present heat flow conditions and depths are simply not consistent with recent formation. It's doubtful that ocean crust could have subsided to the observed depths in only thousands of years since the end of the flood. On the top left and right are depictions of the ocean lithosphere for gradual versus rapid formation conditions. Here are some problems for rapid formation. It's legitimate to ask how wide would the zones of molten or very hot rock extend from the spreading center during rapid spreading? Are ridge transform faults, which you saw on the Heisen-Tharp map, even possible if the material is not rigid around the zone of spreading? How long would it take for 5+ kilometers of columns of molten basalt over the mantle source cool? How long would it take? Minutes, hours, days, months, years? In fact, if mantle is directly upwelling to the surface, the rock would not even be the chemistry of basalt, but some kind of ultramafic rock with much lower silicon dioxide content, perhaps more similar to the crust of the moon. And then finally, what stratigraphy would result? Basal oceanic crust is composed of coarse crystalline gabbro, which indicates slow cooling and crystallization. The CPT model includes an explanation for ocean crust magnetic anomalies described previously. They propose that cool oceanic crust descending to the core mantle boundary produced strong core convection, including rapid reversals of the Earth's magnetic field as expressed in the rapidly forming ocean crust. There's no explanation for why stronger core convection would lead to rapid reversals. But there is a problem with the actual process and timing of how rocks lock in paleomagnetic directions. Basalt forms below about 1,000 degrees centigrade, but magmatism is set at about 570 degrees centigrade, the Curie point. With such rapid emplacement of basalt in the spreading zones, this point of rock magnetism would occur some distance from the spreading center and result in a much less organized pattern. Stripes, blotches, not sure, blobs. The CPT model attempts to explain the source of global rain with the idea that upwelling magma jettisons steam into the atmosphere, truly creating fountains of the great deep. This would certainly warm the oceans, but what about the atmosphere? In the model, there's no accounting for the extreme amount of heat released in the atmosphere by condensation of these steam fountains. There is no air conditioning in the arc that I saw in Kentucky. But the warm ocean is useful to the flood geology hypothesis for the Pleistocene Ice Age. They claim that it followed the flood by about 100 years and lasted only a few centuries. Warm ocean water evaporates readily and might promote more snow precipitation in the higher latitudes. This compressed ice age ignores evidence for multiple ice advances over 2 million years and rates of modern crustal rebound in formerly glaciated regions, consistent with the last ice sheet retreat more like 20,000 years ago. But the warm ocean does not account for earlier glacial episodes in Earth's history, including ice-laid deposits on Pangaea, which formed under, in their model, warm ocean water. Paleoglacier deposits on continents in the southern hemisphere were included in Alfred Wegener's evidence for the existence of Pangaea. I feature here the work of one of my former students, Lindsay Henry. She described terrestrial and subaqueous glacial deposits of Pennsylvanian age in Tasmania. Note the dropstone fabric of the diamictite, which are similar to the kinds of morainal deposits that we could see in New England, and the striations on some of the cobbles, which we saw striations on the granitic bedrock on our field trip this weekend. These are all typical of glacial deposition, impossible in a warm ocean if that's where Pangaea formed. According to the CPT model, as in the conventional model, collisions of continents at subduction zones created mountain fold and thrust belts like the Appalachian, Himalayan, Caspian, and Alps. Based on field evidence, including the relative ages of rocks and the degree of landscape erosion, we can identify distinct episodes of mountain formation. For example, the mountain belts here highlighted in red formed during collisions that assembled Pangaea, including the Appalachians, Caledonian, and Ural Mountains. Mountains highlighted in blue formed after Pangaea broke up, such as the Cordilleran, Rockies, Alps, Himalayas. Some of the mountains didn't actually form by continental collision, but multiple sequential collisions of smaller continental fragments, like island arcs. If we go back further in time, the green areas highlight the roots of mountains that formed before or during the assembly of the first continent, supercontinent Rodinia. If all these mountain belts formed during the same year or only in the past 6,000 years, why are they not all eroded to the same level? Finally, the advocates consider how and when catastrophic plate tectonics slowed to the present rates of movement. They suggest it stopped when the pre-flood oceanic floor had been replaced with new, less dense, less subductible ocean crust. But when would that happen? The pre-flood ocean crust would have been consumed at the time of Pangaea formation, or shortly after it formed. Why would Pangaea break up and plates continue to move at the catastrophic rates? Most flood geologists mark the end of the flood at or near the end of the Mesozoic era. By conventional dating, that's about 66 million years ago. But as you can see on this map, ocean floor is as old as 280 million years. Wouldn't all of that crust have been consumed if catastrophic plate tectonics ended at the end of the Mesozoic era? Finally, Remember that Baumgartner's simulation begins with Pangaea, not Rodinia. He's only modeled half or less of the total plate motion of Earth's history. Looking at the creationist literature, it's clear that the flood geologist ignored or did not accept the existence of Rodinia until after Baumgartner's work in the late 1990s. A natural corollary to catastrophic plate tectonics is the idea of exponential decrease in global geological activity and power after the flood. This is a slide from a recent lecture by Steve Austin. The idea is illustrated at the Creation Museum with this poster display showing the distribution and volume of volcanic ash from volcanoes in the western U.S. Reading from the exhibit, after the flood, the motion of crust generated catastrophes, large at first, smaller in time. Supervolcanoes and superquakes rocked the Earth for centuries, gradually diminishing in size and frequency to the quakes and volcanoes we have today. Let's look at the little block diagram Steve Austin put together. It's interesting that two of the three eruptions of the Yellowstone caldera are represented. And the chronological sequence is not depicted on his graph, but it's strongly inferred in the display. I teach a course on natural disasters, and I've led several trips to Yellowstone National Park, and I thought it was curious that he didn't include the second of the three eruptions or any other eruptions from around the world. This is what the illustration should look like, with corrections and additions which do not fit the predictions of their model. So with the admission ticket that I paid of $35, visitors to the Creation Museum deserve a better accounting of the data. In conclusion, plate tectonics is an empirically documented model for upper mantle crust Earth processes. It's accepted by both young Earth creationists and conventional geoscientists. Catastrophic plate tectonics is an extrapolation of modern tectonic processes and rates to accommodate plate motions inferred from geologic data over the Genesis flood year. Despite sophisticated computer modeling, the hypothesis fails to consider inherent problems of rock formation and deformation or explain the actual geology and geothermal properties of the Earth's ocean and continental crust. Thank you.
All right, we have time for some questions.
Yes.
It's nice to have a geologist who asks this question. Every time I see this, I came off the West Coast and I've experienced earthquakes, simple tremors. And that's with the movement of the crust in a matter of. So these kind of crustal movements at rate, what kinds of energy would you expect to be released? And how does that get dissipated?
It's just not addressed in their model that they're outrageous. I mean, you really can't have an earthquake be above a little bit more than 9 on the Richter or on the new scale, because just the Earth just doesn't have that kind of energy, and the crust just doesn't account for that in terms of rock mechanics. So yeah, it's totally unrealistic. That is interesting. I mean, there are discussions of how the Grand Canyon formed, and you get into a little bit of that in terms of the fact that you have incised meanders rather than just sheet flow. And so, yeah, those kinds of concerns have been raised.
Steve Moser is a co-author of more chapters in this book on the Grand Canyon than anybody else. So I want to let you know that I have a couple here for sale, which we would have to take care of outside the door, but just kind of let you know I'm here, and thank Kristen for letting us to have some out on the table during the program.
Thank you.
All right. That's all set here, I think.